When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Quick note before we start the show that we're lucky to be able to keep podcasting, to keep working. We're lucky to be connected to you in the way that we are. And I don't know, I think that my colleagues and I feel a sense of purpose throughout this that is helping us deal with this, frankly. So we're in a good spot in that way. But in another way, in a more practical way, in a financial way, we're facing headwinds that are very challenging. And we're looking at some real difficulties ahead. Listen, please take care of yourself first. But if you are in a position to help us out, it has never been easier to help Canada Land than it is right now. You can just click on the link in the show notes, or you can go to canadalandshow.com/join. And for $5 a month Canadian, you can get ad-free podcasts from us. It takes moments. It's kind of neat. It just shows up in your podcast listening apparatus instantly. And we rely on that help from you. So you can also help us out with an e-transfer if you send it to support@canadalandshow.com. Thanks very much. Nora Loretto, writer and activist, joining me from Quebec City. Hello.
Hi.
Nora, today we're going to talk about traveling moistly. Did our leaders willfully ignore their own advice on social distancing? And conspiracy theories. They used to just be a fun hobby. Now you have to risk dying a lonely and gruesome death if you want to spit out that Kool-Aid and stray from the sheeple herd. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Jack Hickmott, Neil Graham, Jessica Baqueta, Rachel Klassen, John McDonald, Andrew Priegert, Mandy Mitten, and Chris Dawes.
I'm a Toronto-based musician and meta-theorist living in Georgetown, Ontario. And if you're wondering what a meta-theorist is, it's someone who likes to know why things are the way they are and is prepared to look a level higher than the narrative and the taken for granted. And that's why I support Canada Land, because my country needs accountable public media, and we need to know what's going on under the hood and behind what we're showing.
Okay, so Nora, before the Easter weekend, this is what our Prime Minister told us.
This weekend is going to be very different. You'll have to stay home. You'll have to Skype that big family dinner. And the Easter egg hunt, well, it'll have to happen around the house. instead of around the neighborhood.
And that's what he said to Canadians standing outside of Rideau Cottage on the grounds of Rideau Hall in Ottawa before Easter weekend. So what did he do on Easter weekend? Well, I learned through the Toronto Sun and through a lot of angry conservatives on the internet that he's a big fucking hypocrite. He got in his motorcade with his full entourage on Saturday afternoon. He drove 27 kilometers crossing provincial boundaries from Ontario to Quebec to the Prime Minister's summer residence at Harrington Lake. And he spent Easter weekend with Sophie and the kids. And this, of course, was exposed when Sophie says, "Hello, world. It's me, Sophie. Here's a selfie from our Easter weekend," exposing, you know, telling on herself, I guess, that this had happened. And his alibi, his excuse, his explanation was that he did not break the rules of public health authorities. Nora, did he break the rules?
Have public health authorities been clear about individuals who have two homes? They have been clear about cottages. And so if you consider this kind of like a cottage, he broke the rules. But this is, I think, a real failure of PR from the Prime Minister, I would say.
I mean, I don't want to move on too quickly because I think that he's right that he didn't break the rules of public health officials. I think he twisted this in his explanation. Did you break the rules? I didn't break the public health official rules. It's pretty clear that both provinces have been clear. You are not supposed to cross the provincial line. And I don't think there's any question that both in spirit and in letter, you know, he broke the advice that he was telling Canadians. And I think that it's disingenuous for him to kind of just try to twist it and say, well, if you look at these regulations, I didn't break anything. So I absolutely can see why conservatives are pointing a finger at him. That message was very quickly diffused when a counter accusation of hypocrisy was lobbed at Andrew Scheer.
Yeah, which is, I think, a major difference than Justin Trudeau.
So as reported by the CBC, Nora, and of course, when the CBC was the one to break the story about Scheer supposedly breaking the rules as well, many conservative voices were quick to say, oh, here comes the CBC to the rescue of Justin Trudeau. Nevertheless, there are questions to be asked about this jet that the Prime Minister's office sent to go pick up Andrew Scheer to bring him to Ottawa for Parliament. But he brought his wife and, you know, what is it, 18 children with him, I guess five kids. And Elizabeth May was on the flight as well. And she was uncomfortable that the whole family was there. And like, I don't know, it's just impossible to maintain social distancing on a flight. But like, why did he have to bring the wife and kids? But Elizabeth May seemed to be understanding. She said, well, you know, if he didn't bring his wife and kids, they would have had to fly commercial. Then they'd be exposed there. And, you know, they were careful. They brought disinfectant wipes. The Scheers brought smears with them. Andrew Scheer, you know, in his defense, he said, well, he was kind of mocking. He said, well, I didn't speak moistly on the flight.
Gross.
I don't know what to make of all of this. Like, it seems pretty clear to me that in both cases, they did break the rules that we're all trying to obey right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, like, I am not surprised by either's activities or behaviors. I think that it's easy to be very frustrated with Justin Trudeau because this entire time his shtick has been, you know, we're in this together, we've got to follow these rules, and this is the only way we're going to beat coronavirus. And he's been relying on that rhetoric as a way to like avoid criticism of a lot of his government's missteps and what they haven't done or what they've not done enough of or done fast enough of or whatever on the economic plans and on helping the provinces to fight COVID-19. And so it's an easy thing to kind of point a finger at. And I was a bit surprised to see that he did that because, you know, in Quebec, like the premier of Quebec, François Legault, and the director of public health, Horacio Arruda, they make a big deal all the time about how they haven't seen their family in a month and they're sequestered basically so that they can do their daily briefing and make sure that they don't get sick. Trudeau has been treating this a lot more in a flashy kind of way or as a show. Partly, I think it doesn't help that he's doing these daily briefings without anyone from Public Health Canada, so that he's just turning it into kind of like the Trudeau show. And so to have the photo from Sophie show that he probably violated some regulations, yeah, it's a super bad look. I'm a little surprised we haven't seen more bad looks like this. I mean, other than his hair, which is not obviously able to be cut right now. But it's just, it gives fodder to the conservatives and it's not helpful. I do think, though, that Scheer bringing his whole family is a different situation. And that I was very surprised by, only because Scheer Like, this guy has no clue how average people exist. Trudeau obviously has no clue either. He's the son of a prime minister. But Scheer is one of these strange beasts who has been a conservative since the age of 15. And everything about his life has been to be the leader of the Conservative Party. And I mean, he just, it's like his children's education is paid for by the party. He doesn't pay for his own dry cleaning. And then all of a sudden, his fucking family jumps aboard a work trip to get him to Ottawa to be able to be in the House of Commons. It's like, sorry, Scheers. Like, yeah, take a commercial flight. I mean, who's even flying commercially these days? How unsafe is that really?
I hear you. I'm just having trouble getting enraged about this. I mean, I can see it. I can see it. And I think there are people who, in observance of the rules, are seeing their businesses die. And that's a sacrifice that people are making for the greater good. There are people who are not saying goodbye to their parents as their parents die.
Yeah.
And they're doing that in observance of these rules. So I get that it is enraging to people to watch the leaders flout the rules. At the same time, I feel like it has to be recognized just how petty this is. Like, you know, this finger pointing, and now it seems like it's not just at the level of the leaders of the parties, but like the media is filled with stories about people getting ticketed at park benches, or people doing like a chin up on a gymnasium in a park and getting a ticket, or like, you know, I'm feeling this personally, like these questions of the spirit of the rules and the letter of the rules, you know. Like, okay, so here in Toronto, like, just to maintain well-being and sanity and to have kids, you got to get them outdoors. And I see that down at the lakeshore, people on a nice day in the weekend are like biking and rollerblading on the boardwalk in a line in one consistent like airstream, breathing each other's, you know,
moisture.
Yeah. And I feel like in the spirit of true liberalism, I'm like, you know what? That doesn't look safe to me. But I don't know your circumstances. I don't know if you're able to get further away than there. And I just hope everyone's OK. And you actually might be following the letter of the law, but it certainly like doesn't seem safe. Meanwhile, I've been trying to just like break up the monotony of my kids. Like, you know, they're at home, they're in the same like parking lot basically for outdoor time by going on hikes. And I have the privilege of having a car where I can find like a nature hike that's like 40 minutes outside of Toronto. And that feels like that is the spirit of like the science of this, to get away from other human beings in the most isolated place possible. Feels like that makes sense. But of course, when we show up to those hiking trails, they're closed off. And I'm unclear. Are we violating a guideline, a suggestion, or a law by doing this? And I know that I'm there in order to observe the science that, as I understand it. I mean, some of this can feel asinine or absurd. The spirit of this is ennobling. The spirit of this, that we are giving up so much liberty, like in order to save each other and help each other, there's dignity in that. And yet it goes on and on, Nora. Like,
yeah.
Toronto announced that for these $1,000 tickets in the park, Toronto announced individuals who need to physically rest while out on a walk are permitted to use the benches to recover. However, lingering and use of benches beyond necessary resting purposes is prohibited.
Right.
And, you know, Jonathan Goldsby here, our editor, says, oh, good, Toronto police and bylaw officers get to decide who is lingering and who has a necessary resting purpose. I'm sure enforcement will be just and equitable.
Yeah.
And of course, we know it won't be. That's an extraordinary amount of power. There are some bullies amongst the cops who are using this as an excuse to harass and fine the most vulnerable people in society. I just feel like we have to cut each other some slack here. I don't know what we expect of each other. People are just trying to maintain their well-being and get through this. Like, unless somebody seems like they are actively and recklessly endangering, you know, your health by endangering their own. I don't know. Like, what do you think, Nora?
You have said so much, like so many different issues are wrapped up into what you just said. So I'm going to try to take them apart, because I think that you're bumping up against a really important issue, except you haven't quite named it. So I personally don't give a rat's ass about Scheer or about Trudeau. So I'm not enraged by this. I think it's like, whatever. But why did it get so much traction in the press? I think it's because some journalists are chasing an easy story, and there's not much of an easier story than that. I think that some journalists are reluctant to really dig into this question of legality and this question of state power and what we really are and aren't allowed to do. I mean, the real problem that we have is that we have confined people to their homes and we have not given them what they need to stay in their homes. So I, like you, have kids and I live in a city. I don't have a backyard. The only place that we can go to ride bikes is like an empty parking lot, which is fine. I don't have a car, so we can't leave the city to go anywhere. And our streets are just as full as all of the streets that I'm hearing in the rest of Canada, right? On Sunday, it was a beautiful day. It was Easter. So there's tons of people around. And a side street that's meant to be a bicycle access was just a parade of people, just a long parade of people. And on one hand, you can get mad that there's so many people out and you're one of them. On the other hand, there's nowhere else to go. And that's the fault of city planners, of municipalities that have refused to close streets to car traffic to allow us to take up this space. I mean, the sidewalk that I live in front of that I have to pass on every single day is not 2 meters wide. It's barely a meter wide. It's like just larger than a meter. And so anytime that I leave my house, which is never, I mean, I think I'm spending 3 days at a time in the house before going outside. I have to walk in the middle of a really busy road. And so, like, the journalists who are focusing on Trudeau or focusing on Scheer, they need to be writing far more and challenging far more our politicians, all levels of government, to hear what their plans are to help us stay home. And so, aside from city planning or town planning kind of measures, why are we talking about fines instead of talking about being paid to stay home? You know,
yeah.
Why is that the direction that we've taken? Or why are we handing such power to bylaw officers? Like, who the fuck is a bylaw officer? One. Two, police. Like, we've got idle police right now. And so it's not a huge surprise that there has also been how many people killed by police in the last week and a half in Canada? At least four. There was also someone run over in Toronto who the police were chasing at Shepherd and Allen, and he was then arrested after they ran him over. I mean, you know, we have unchecked power in a lot of situations in society at the best of times. You know, there's problems with our internal investigation bureaus, with police forces across this country. It's very hard to get justice when the police are doing things that are bad. So, of course, during a crisis, we're going to see that laid bare, and we're going to see the overreach of the security state into people's driveways for drinking or into people's families walking in the park. Like, I saw someone in Oakville was fined for being with his three kids in a park, getting an $850 fine. We don't have clear guidelines. And when you don't have clear guidelines and you have people who are power tripping and you also have this like generalized anxiety in the state, you're going to see these things happen. And they will happen disproportionately to people who are poor. Obviously, people who live in these spaces are going to be the most targeted, the most policed, and we know that that's happening, and that will disproportionately be expressed in racial profiling, in profiling of the poor. I mean, Montreal police set out something like 700 tickets this last weekend. Are we going to see the racial data of how those tickets were distributed? We might. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see it soon. It's going to be probably a year from now. Oh, look, who was the most policed during this crisis? But it's far easier to talk about Andrew Scheer being a spoiled brat than it is to deal with these issues.
That's helpful in helping me organize my thoughts. I don't necessarily agree with one aspect of that, which is the perennial, why are you looking at that when you should be looking at this? Obviously, it's newsworthy if Trudeau and Scheer are breaking their own rules or the rules. And I think that it does tell us something about the wider picture. But I agree with you in essence, because I don't know, like, it's really been on my mind in a larger sense, like, we have suddenly given up so much. And it's not just, you know, at first I'm focused on, oh, I miss people. I want to see people. I want to touch people. But it's like freedom of movement is gone. Freedom of assembly is gone. Freedom to protest in physical spaces is gone. Like the essential freedoms, freedom of trade is gone. Like this is like, you know, centuries, millennia of human progress where people fought and died to have rights that are kind of what makes human existence like dignified in any way, is the ability to do these things. And the only dignity that's left is that we didn't have those rights forcibly stripped from us. The only dignity is that we made a really compassionate choice to surrender them, to suspend them momentarily for the greater good, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where everybody was at like a week or two ago. But that's like, it's a radical and sudden rewriting of the social contract. And it only can be maintained if we are voluntarily doing that. It gets polluted and perverted immediately when, no, your rights are stripped from you and it's not a matter of voluntary participation. You're not a human anymore. Like, then it is herd immunity, and you're just cattle, and you're just a mammal that must be separated from other mammals so that a virus doesn't, you know, jump off you and onto somebody else. And somebody will prod you with a taser if you get out of line, and do as we say, even if it doesn't make any sense, and don't do as we do because we're not going to follow these damn rules. And it's a fragile moment we're at, that if people's crankiness or their questioning, you know, gets to a point where it flows over their sense of buy-in and reason, we're dealing with elemental forces. Like, this could go sideways really bad. And I think you're right. The part of that is about, like, okay, I'm willing to do my part, make that possible for me. First of all, make sure people have money who need it. But also, don't fucking lie to me that you're following the public health guidelines, Trudeau, when you are obviously doing what none of us are allowed to do. And furthermore, and this is where I agree with you 100%, what is the plan? Tell me what the plan is, because I'm reading the big thinkers out there and they're saying, like, it's just not, this is not something that we can sustain until a vaccine. We can't self-isolate for like 18 months,
right?
You know, and already we're getting these like signals that the prime minister is talking to the provinces about what the, you know, stages of opening up society again will be. And Saskatchewan has no new cases and they're talking about that. Well, give me the scenarios. Trust me with the information you have. Tell me, like, this is happening. The governor of California said, here are the circumstances under which we'll restart, you know, society again. We need to know what the plan is.
So here's part of the problem with what you're saying. In your very rapid history of liberalism, you glossed over the periods of time, though, where there have been quarantines and there have been plagues. I mean, our memory is so short in the 21st century that we forget that this is very a normal thing for humanity to go through. And it's not just our goodwill that is pushing us to follow these rules, however extreme they are. It's also our survival, right? I'm staying home because I don't want to get sick. And I think that that's a lot of people's perspective on this. I don't want other people to get sick, but I very fucking much do not want to get sick myself. And so I'm primarily driven by not wanting to deal with sick children, not wanting to feel what the coronavirus apparently feels like. That's the flip side of our liberties, is that we actually are willing to give up those liberties in situations of crisis. The problem comes, I think, when we assume that there is a plan. Like, you want to see the government's plans and for them to be transparent. I'm not convinced that there really is much of a plan, right? Like, when they do start giving us glimpses of what their plans are, we hear the Premier of Quebec saying kids will be in school on May 4th. It's like, that's not a fucking plan. Like, that's fantasy. That's not going to happen. And so I think it's a little bit more complex than just, like, let the people know what you're doing. We are assuming that they actually have good plans, or we are assuming that they actually even have plans. And I think that what's really going on, it's kind of two things. One is that they're imagining, maybe, hopefully, with the models that they have, maybe that we can do X, maybe we can do Y, but it's so hypothetical that they can't put that out because it's meaningless. While at the same time dealing with the real pressing emergency, which is the unbelievable amount of death that's happening within long-term care. It's the same people that kind of have to manage these two ways of approaching this crisis. But you said that, you know, at some point people just won't stand for this and things might blow up or something like this. And I want to know, who do you think, what kind of person do you think is the one that's going to crack, or the one that's going to not be able to take it and then just start breaking these rules?
Well, we'll talk about that in our next segment. All right, Nora, we are going to note duly some things that need due notation. You've been doing, I think, some important work. Can you tell us about this spreadsheet you've been compiling?
Yes, I've been putting together a spreadsheet that tries to account for all of the deaths within long-term care or senior residences in Canada. And it was incredible to me that it hadn't been done yet, which is why I decided to do it. And so in the spreadsheet, I've got something like 48 or 49 long-term care facilities, seniors' residences, and then in one case, a wing of a hospital in Montreal, and how many confirmed dead there have been at each one of these institutions because of COVID-19. Although in some cases, it's not clear that everybody was killed from COVID itself or from the overburden within the home related to other people who were sick. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty incredible because I've already found, I've been able to cross-reference more than half of the total deaths in this country. And it lays bare something that I think that we have to duly note, and I think which will be the most important story of the pandemic once this is all over, which is that governments were so focused on making sure that we had ICU capacity that they didn't think at all that maybe the majority of people who get sick from COVID would be too sick to even make it to the ICU and would die in their residence. And in a lot of cases, that residence is a private facility. It's a for-profit facility. It operates with a lack of staff, very few staff. Staffing ratios are really horrible in a lot of these facilities across Canada. And it's really laid bare for a lot of Canadians who may not have had any contact with long-term care before this, just how brutal the conditions are in a lot of long-term care in Canada, which, of course, you know, if you remember the case of Elizabeth Wetlaufer, who was the serial killer in southwestern Ontario a couple of years ago, you'll know because the inquiry that happened after her murders basically laid all of this bare. So the spreadsheet's available. It's pinned to my Twitter feed, and anybody is welcome to use that data however they want. I know there's one group that's mapping the cases now on a physical map. So that's kind of neat to see the data being used that way.
Well, I think you're right that this is going to end up being one of the biggest stories of this pandemic. And I think what you're doing is a resource for all and important. We are also dedicating, like, we're going to have a lot more to say about long-term care because this is like everything with this pandemic, it's revealing things that were problematic and overlooked for a long time that were already at the breaking point. And we're going to dig deep into that. But duly noted, Nora. I would like to duly note that finally, proof of CBC's Liberal Party bias emerged. And this is, I'm telling you.
Was it The House? The show The House? Because it's pretty much there.
Well, you know, this has been a bugaboo of the idea that there is explicit bias, that CBC's airwaves are kind of like working in tandem with the Liberal Party of Canada, with the Trudeau government. But how do you prove a thing like that? Like, I worked there and I never experienced anything like that. I mean, if anything, it was the other side. They were so worried about being called, you know, liberal friendly that they would stack panels with conservative strategists. And, you know, it was the opposite. Mm. Then you can look at it from the point of view of like, well, yes, if you do surveys of people's politics, CBC staffers do lean left. But then again, so does the politics of any university educated workplace, mm-hmm. you know? So hey, this has been going on for years. How do you prove whether or not CBC is in the tank? Well, finally, the proof emerged because ultimately it would be above my pay grade when I was a host there, or most people's pay grade. It would be like a cluster of people. Like, it would have been like the head of news at the time, Jennifer McGuire and Peter Mansbridge, and like three other people who are like, you know, have some phone to the prime minister's office. And those would be the only people who knew. And the only way you would find out if there was such a cabal would be if one of them, like late in retirement, decided to go whistleblower and say, finally, the truth must be known. Well, Nora, it happened. Neil MacDonald.
Oh.
Now he's got a new Twitter account. He's not like Terry Mlewski. It's not a CBC affiliated Twitter account. He's retired. And he revealed that there's a commissar who has a direct line into the ear of Rosemary Barton. And it's a failsafe in case, he writes, in case the journalist fails to recognize that something might harm the Liberal Party, there is a person dedicated to telling, cut, go to a different story. This is going to hurt Justin Trudeau. And he revealed this, and the conservative internet on Twitter went mad with glee, and he was retweeted hundreds of times, and people celebrated Neil MacDonald for finally telling the truth. Dudes, he was kidding.
Oh my God.
It went viral. It was a contemptuous joke on my part. He later said he was trying to be funny like his brother. You know, I worked there for 32 years. I've never experienced the slightest political pressure. If I had, I would have screamed about it hard and long. Wow. People were so waiting for somebody to reveal this that they completely missed a rather obvious joke on the part of Neil MacDonald.
Duly noted.
I have one more that I want to duly note. Something that I think ties into our discussion earlier about police going a bit power mad, or maybe this could have happened otherwise. But this is a story that was reported by an anchor at CP24 as Police chased and eventually arrested a suspect with a knife. Wow, okay, the police chased and eventually arrested a suspect armed with a knife. Good for the police. The video tells a very different story. And actually, the written version by CP24 is much better than what we heard from the anchor on television. Witnesses said that they heard a man screaming, "I don't know what's happening. I don't know what I'm doing. I have mental health. I have mental health," screaming it over and over again. And then video shot by witnesses show a man with a knife being cornered by two squad cars and a bunch of cops on foot. And then deliberately, willfully, like slowly enough that it wasn't out of control, but fast enough that it was like lethal force, a squad car plows into this guy. And then it looks like just ba-bump, ba-bump, rolls over him. It's a snuff film. Like, you're watching the cops attempt to murder this guy. I don't know how else to describe this. We've since learned that the guy sustained a serious injury, of course, and SIU has invoked its mandate. So, you know, there are people online saying, well, you know, what were the cops supposed to do? The guy had a knife and they tried to taser him. It didn't work. It's amazing what people will say. Like, I can't imagine a universe where this was the appropriate response. And the fact that this got reported as police just chasing and eventually arresting a guy with a knife was a disgusting, I think, just false report about this act of police violence that I feel should be duly noted.
Yeah. So earlier in the episode, I made reference to this, and I said that it happened at Allen and Shepherd. And the reason why I made that mistake was because there was another situation up there last week as well, where a police cruiser collided with someone at Allen and Shepherd. And so I mixed the two issues up.
So there were two incidents.
Yeah. Because I knew it was at Front Street. And then I saw Allen and Shepherd. I thought, oh, I made the mistake. But no, there were two incidents. So I'm going to duly note all the police brutality that happens in Canada.
I think we got to keep our vigilance up. Like, what's happening on the ground while everybody's at home? We don't know what we don't know, but luckily somebody did videotape this. So let's make sure it doesn't slip under the radar.
Duly noted.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter, like, seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Okay, so Nora, you asked earlier, who would be the first to defy reason, defy science, defy compassion for the elderly, for their neighbor, for fellow citizens, and who would just say, fuck it? I mean, really, it could come from anyone, right? I mean, it could come from the left. It could come from people who are very concerned about civil liberties being stripped from them. It could come from people who are, targeted by cops because of their race. Anybody could be the first to say, end the lockdown. Science and reason be damned.
No, it's not anyone.
No, it wasn't anyone.
No.
It was this putz.
based on these faulty numbers and this common cold here that's going around, that you are freaking out because you've been drinking the Kool-Aid of the mainstream media. Just stop with the fear state. Stop pointing the finger at each other and start pointing the finger at the real enemy, the real culprit here. We're talking about the government.
I'm not going to say this asshole's name, but he went viral. It wasn't his protest. It was another idiot who called for this take to the streets, end the lockdown protest in Vancouver. And surprise, surprise, could have been anyone. It's a 9/11 truther, YouTuber, conspiracy theorist, white dude with aviators and a beard who has Faith Goldie come onto his YouTube channel and who's sort of like a dime store Alex Jones. Of course. Yeah. Of course. Of course it was that asshole.
Yeah, it's not too surprising that that there are these conspiracy theories that are questioning so much about this illness. And I mean, this is always going to exist. This is, of course, the first pandemic that's hit the scale that it's hit where we have mass communications. And so, you know, we can only imagine what kind of wacky things were emerging during the influenza pandemic of 1918. We will never know because they didn't have access to the internet or to a blog or to a bunch of disaffected people that are willing to believe anything. I did retweet one of that guy's photos, and I did so because there's a good 10 or 12 people in the picture whose faces are really clear. And I really hope that they can be identified publicly and that their friends and family can do what they can to try and disabuse them of some of these theories. It's such a, as you said earlier, it's such a fragile time that we're existing in. And on one hand, it's great to see that our politicians, who I normally have absolutely no respect for, not really feed the worst elements of what emerges during an emergency, other than maybe Jason Kenney. That guy is, as the price of oil drops into the ground, so does him. It's kind of fun to watch. But otherwise, I mean, people, the leadership that we have are being like stately and reasonable, especially in opposition to Donald Trump. And I think that the kind of the conspiracy theory laden administration of Donald Trump just feeds so many of these tiny groups all around the world. It's dangerous. I'd be curious, though, to know if these guys have any power at all or any reach at all, because I certainly haven't seen any average people sharing this to say, oh, OK, cool. So 5G is the reason why we have this illness.
Yeah, this took place after the whole 5G thing where people were ripping down cell towers in the UK. It's an interesting question. Like, you know, you say power or reach. They're different things. In practice, I think there were like less than 20 people at this and the lockdown protest on the streets of Vancouver. But in this age that we live in, under 20 people can get the attention of like a million people, which is not to say that people were excitedly sharing this because they agree. It's a media story to me because when you create a situation where like, most of the people sharing that thought this guy was an idiot and were just sharing to say, look at this idiot. But that message, that simple sentence, end the lockdown, it's almost like we've just created this perfect hothouse condition for that message to go viral, to take off. It's almost a secondary concern whether people are mocking it or agreeing with it, because the line between those things is also very fragile. When Jerry Butts subtweets the guy, or Seth Rogen says, you're an idiot, go inside, you know, it brings more oxygen to it, and it starts this little itch in people's brains of like, oh, maybe there is something to this. It seems like it was a one-day story. I'm glad for it to go away. I, you know, with kind of some trepidation even mention it, because I think that message should go away. But I think that when, you know, for things we were discussing earlier, the degradation of this moment of trust between us takes root, we're going to see more and more of these little things pop up, you know, if we don't kind of get on track. One thing I want to note about it, though, is I like that you actually have to put skin in the game to be a conspiracy theory idiot now. Because before, you could just sit in your basement and ask for Barack Obama's birth certificate or talk about whether jet fuel could burn this or that. There's really no cost to you, except that you were, you know, considered a fool by, you know, any reasonable person. But now, if you want to actually take the position that this whole thing is a hoax from big government, you have to go and risk death. And that's how it should be. I, you know, good. And that's maybe why that thing gets a lot more shares online than it does physical participants on the streets of Vancouver.
Yeah, and it might be worth noting, too, that there was a recent international Nazi ring that was just kind of identified. A lot of the activists were online. And I'm not sure if you saw this, but their leader is a 13-year-old from Estonia. And the members were all shocked to see that he wasn't, you know, an adult. The problem, though, I think that, and this is how we need to see these kinds of fringe responses to the state that we live in, is end the lockdown is not an unreasonable question for people to ask. In fact, many high-profile people are talking about ending the lockdown, including premiers, right? There's premiers saying we're going to end the lockdown. And so the tension between when do we end this lockdown, how does it end, you know, as we mentioned earlier, and why is it still operating? What is the point of us all being stuck in our homes? These are actually really important points of tension. And this is where journalists have to think really hard about how their reporting is either making it clear why the lockdown exists or helping explain to Canadians how that lockdown will slowly be lifted. And then, of course, this is where politicians do need to let us know what they're thinking so that we can either say, yes, this is a good plan, or no, this is a horrible plan. We need to change that plan. Because there is an obsession with kind of predicting the future. And this has been one of my pet peeves this entire thing. Is the number of questions that politicians are getting from some journalists, like, when is this going to end? When will things be back to normal? As if fucking anybody knows. Like, it's like, that is the worst question right now. And so recognizing that the far right is going to capture some element of a popular notion and try to do what they can with it to try and turn people into far right zombies as well. You know, to not pay attention to what they're doing, but to listen to those threads of doubt and say, okay, what is driving people's frustration with being locked down? Is it economic? Is it anxious, anxiety? Is it just that the schools are closed? These kinds of questions. Keeping our eye on the prize in this situation, I think, is the most important.
I think so. And I just think, like you say, like actually explaining the answers to these questions, or where answers don't exist, explaining that, yeah. As we mentioned earlier, like, that's how you maintain trust. And, you know, we're doing one of the only rights that's actually left is freedom of expression, which we're exercising right now. And I think that, you know, this CBC is reporting now, federal government open to new law to fight pandemic misinformation. And so the Privy Council President, Dominic LeBlanc, he wants to start a law to crack down on assholes like this and the lockdown guy in his protest. And NDP's Charlie Angus is on board, wants the RCMP. We don't need that. We don't need that. We can deal with this shit in public discourse. It will only increase distrust of authority. It will only erode the social contract that everybody is participating in good faith to start cracking down on, you know, government deciding what is the misinformation and what is not. We're not there yet. And this is sort of like, I'll fight for this is the last, it's the last one, Nora, that we can do. We can still talk about it.
Yeah, well, to imagine that the government even has the resources to do such a thing right now is pretty ridiculous. Like, a lot of people, I pointed out that any group of, what, 10 or 20 gathering in Vancouver should have been fined, like at the very least, or ticketed. And it wasn't clear that they were. And so, you know, we could start there, maybe, right? Like, the government is not going to be the arbiter of what is real and what isn't real, because so much of what they want to be real isn't real. So.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. As mentioned, it's never been easier to support us. Please do. Just click the link in your show notes or go to canadalandshow.com/join. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything that you send us. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. We are on Instagram at Canada Land Show. Nora, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Nolore, N-O-L-O-R-E, or at sandyandnora.com.
Our website is canadalandshow.com. There is a new episode of Commons this week for their run on the topic of radicals, and it is all about the AIDS pandemic, a pandemic where the fight was against a virus, but also against a system that did not care whether certain people lived or died. This is a fantastic episode and a timely one. Check out this week's Commons. This episode is produced by David Crosby. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.